Hello, mech fans, and welcome to the Valhalla Club. Grab yourself a Timbiki Dark, set up that paint booth, open that spreadsheet, and join us as we talk all things Battletech.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Valhalla Club podcast. My name is Matt the Northman, and I will be your bartender tonight. With me, I've got my bueno friends, Mr. Bourbon himself, Mike the Viking, and Cerberus Dave joining us tonight. Welcome, everyone. I didn't put this in the show notes because I wanted this to be totally random. So here we go. Random question to get us started off. Okay. Worst vegetable ever. Starting with Mike. Go.
Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts. Dave, go.
Zucchini.
Zucchini. Okay. Ben, can't be any of the others. Go.
Asparagus.
Asparagus.
What? I love asparagus.
Asparagus?
I love
asparagus. Okay. I like Brussels sprouts.
Oh, man. And I'm going to go with, what's that one? Dang it. It has like a red rib to it, and they put it in pie sometimes.
Rhubarb.
Rhubarb. Rhubarb. There we go. Get it out.
Oh,
it
man. Alaska loves rhubarb.
Get it out. Okay, it's there we fruit. Go, guys. It's a fruit? What?
He's like, you're just all around wrong.
Welcome to the Valhalla Club, guys and gals. Let's jump right into it with a little return and report. And I think the only thing we've got to return and report is this awesome event called KSAG, which stands for what, Ben? I don't know.
I think it's the official name is the Kroll Siblings Annual Gathering of Gamers.
Yeah.
That's or the I thought Kroll, it was Kroll Sisters of Go-Go.
No,
that was the cooler name. Yeah. Ben and I went to this, and it was fantastic. This was held up in Minneapolis last weekend as we're recording on the 15th. Ben, what do you want to talk about for KSAG? It was completely awesome, but what can we cover in a couple minutes here?
Yeah, a couple minutes?
Well,
I mean, 10, it was 20, 3 days. Started on Friday morning. Or no, time to start. 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
And then went through till about 10 p.m. Friday evening. Saturday was 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday was 10 a.m. to like 6 o'clock, I think we finished up.
So. Yeah, and this was all at Games Enter, which is a kind of a big... It has a big gaming area, at least, across the street from Asmodee, I think?
I don't think so.
Anyhow, it was pretty cool. So up there in Minneapolis, Minnesota, kind of hosted by the Wolfnet crew, as well as others from there locally and nearby. There was a lot going on. So, well, I'll just tell you guys what I did. So on Friday... I know Ben did different things, but I did what was called the Klondike, Operation Klondike, and this was run by Tom Bovey, and it was kind of a combo where you were on a team, and some of the team would be playing Alpha Strike on one kind of scenario, one map, and right next to him would be playing a game of Classic on another map with different objectives, and so you would kind of total up your scores, and... we had two rounds, so basically two games of whatever you were on, and then whatever team won the most points won. And I, of course, completely sucked it up. But and I was playing on the Classic board. The first game was okay, but the second game was trying to control like almost 20 Classic units, 20 units on a Classic board, with all the craziness that there was with that. But my team managed to squeak out a win only because of the Alpha Strike board next to us. So that was pretty fun and crazy. What were you doing on Friday, Ben?
I was doing the doubles, kind of a mini tournament, casual tournament. Alpha Strike, me and Greg teamed up and did a little...
And you dressed up, of course, right? Right, Ben?
Greg did, yes, he did.
not you, huh?
Man, I didn't have room in my luggage for that. I just need to buy a jumpsuit. That's all I need.
That's true. And you guys were playing... Well, you guys were what faction?
He was the Capellan Confederation, and I was Star League in Exile.
That's right.
Couple good games. You know, I think we only played three rounds of doubles, so we played two guys that were there locally, and they couldn't stay all day. They were just wanting to get in a game, so it was more of a learning game for them. So me and Greg kind of took it easy and, you know, didn't really just showed them what to do kind of stuff. And then second game was against Mario and his daughter, which she was also learning how to play Alpha Strike. But mm-hmm. she was more impressed with the cool markers he had as opposed to what was going on. I give props.
Gotta start somewhere, right?
She was doing a lot of artwork, so it was kind of neat.
Yeah.
Now, our last game was against another two local guys, and I think Greg and I got a little complacent with our first two games, so we got beat up pretty bad the third game. So.
Yeah. Well, it was and the doubles is kind of like that casual tournament, so it's not the big deal, I guess, that everyone's there.
Yeah, we just have a good time, pretty much, you know.
Yeah. And then we rolled into Saturday, where it was the big Alpha Strike 350, the Wolfnet 350 tournament. How'd that go for you, Ben?
Well, I was not being very competitive. So my list consisted of six units. That was my entire list.
Yeah.
I had four mechs.
So you did the Charles Gideon approach.
Yeah, I was looking around prior to KSAC going, you know, I don't want to paint anything anymore. I'm going to take a break. What do I got painted up? These six units will fit.
Yeah, but this is the Charles Gideon method in the early Succession Wars. So.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, no, he's done that at... he did it at Genghis Khan last year. He did it at he's done it several times.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just not feeling a whole list build thing. So I was like, man, I'll just go with what I got. And it was all right, you know. Did we play five games or four? I don't remember.
Yeah, we played five rounds.
Then we played five. I think I won two and lost three. So it was pretty much a shit show.
Any standout games? Anything you need to shake your head at?
I had a good game with Corey H. from Minneapolis. No, he's from Michigan. He's part of that Michigan, whole Goober crew kind of thing. So we had a lot of fun just trying to, you know, we neither one of us had battle armor, so we were both trying to, like, figure out how to do bunkers with no battle armor.
So. Oh, I feel you there. I didn't take any battle armor for bunkers either. So
yeah, so that was a good game. And then I think that was the only standout, really. We just had a lot of fun. Jedi Bob and I finally played a game, so that was good.
Oh, nice.
I don't think we'd ever played each other before. We've seen each other at the last couple Gen Cons and stuff. So we got a game in and put a hurt on each other.
Nice. Yeah, I my list was not that competitive either, but I had fun with it. It was a Comstar list, and my older son, he's just absolutely disgusted because he hates Comstar. So I had to do it just to spite him. But I'm not sure if it was because of that or what. But I got put like at the kids' table, so I played like three youngish people. So Sam Gaskell. I played Mario's daughter, and I played Coach's son, Brody. So I played all those three out of the five. And then the other two, I was the one that caused Mr. Andrew Kroll himself to quit playing for the day. And then I played Derek from Ares Games and Minis. So it was a pretty interesting day for me. As far as wins and losses, technically, I came out with a 2-3 record as well. But there's a little fudge room here because, well, my game with Derek was my last game of the day, and I barely squeaked out a win just on MOV. No, we actually killed each other on the very last round. We, like, tabled each other, and I had less total MOV. Or no, I had points. I had a point. That's what it was. I had a point. So But that was fun to actually play with Derek and meet him and everything. That was awesome. And then the story with Andrew is that, you know, he mistakenly took one unit too many. And when we got to the end of the game, we were calculating MOV. And he's like, you know, there was like this mismatch between what I had killed and then what should be left with, you know, 250 minus what's on the board or whatnot. So we were like going back and forth, you know, what could have caused this like difference in numbers. And eventually it came out that he had an extra unit on the board. And the game before, he had actually
forgotten to place a unit.
Yeah, he forgot to put a grasshopper out when he was playing coach. And so he's like, ah, enough. I can't deal with all the stress of all this stuff going on. And so he's like, I'm done. I'm out. I felt pretty bad about it. I still feel kind of bad because I love to get him and coach out playing with people. So I felt bad that he stopped, but he ended up like giving me a 4-0 win or whatnot, which I really didn't deserve. He had won, I think, 3-2 or 2-1 or something like that. And it was a good, really good game. I really didn't think like his extra unit really played that big of a role. But anyway, so I went 2-3 for the day and finished middle of the table. So
I did have one other standout. That was John, and I think his name was. It was the last game. He just kept feeding me beer the whole time. we were just drinking and having a good time, you know.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah, so I think
that was part of his strategy.
Oh yeah,
it definitely was. It definitely was.
Yeah, I looked over and saw War Crimes doing the same thing, except it was fireballs, and I was like, "Woo, it's a lot to take in right there." Anyhow, great tournament, great fun. And Greg W from here in Colorado ended up taking the whole thing, so came in first place with his what was he running? He had some
Hell's Horses.
Yeah, Hell's Horses. Huh? Had some
Is he the new Mario for Wolfnet events?
He mixes it up a little bit more, but pretty hard to beat, that's for sure. Props to Greg there. Really good tournament. Really a lot of fun happening. Let's see, Sunday fun day. So a little bit more of the relaxed feel again, and I played Drafted for War, and so did Ben. I know because we faced up in the second round of Drafted for War. And let's just
How'd
say,
that go?
Well, the drafted part did not go my way, because I ended up pulling. So you basically like it would work with the little salvage boxes, but they had just like taken mechs out of some of the force packs and put them in a bag so you couldn't see them or whatnot. And you pick a bag, then you get to kind of like pick one out of the bag that you can see all three that are in the bag. You pick one out and then pass around. And so anyways, I ended up with the most powerful force known to man, of course. So I had a blackjack, I had a rifleman, and I had a baboon, a howler, whatever it is. So those were my three mechs. So like that versus what Ben had, what did you have, Ben?
I had a Kodiak, a Dasher, and
that's brutal.
And what else? Oh, and
that stinking 550.
Puma.
Was it a Puma? No, it was the battle. Was it Battle Cobra or Puma? I can't remember. One of those. Anyhow. Needless to say, I was kind of undergunned to face Ben.
It was a cougar. That's what it was.
Oh, that's right. It was a cougar. So yeah, and you like skill them up and everything so that you basically come out with 200
points. Like 150 points or whatever. Yeah, yeah, I had a skill like on Kodiak. That was stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, so Ben won pretty handily.
I ended up losing my last game to Hesby.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. But it was I think, because he had that annihilator that was like throwing like 9 sets of dice every time it shot.
Yeah,
and it was like skill 1. He had an annihilator and something else. But I ended up killing his annihilator and killing something else, and he only had like 1 thing left on the board, and that was it. So
yeah, across 3 rounds, I killed 1 unit. it was pretty rough.
That's rough.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and most of the time, like, people are losing all but 1 unit or something like that, and I killed 1 in 3 rounds. So, well, Ben did better than me, so we'll see. We'll say that.
I still
my dice were not happy. And then after that, I jumped in with Corey H, who you were talking about earlier from Michigan Crew, Corey Held, and he was kind of playtesting this kind of bumped up drafted for work called Conscripted Chaos. And so he sat Diablo, Sean Goolsby, and I down, and we played a kind of like a play test of it, and it was actually pretty fun. I really enjoyed it. It was kind of like a good in-between Drafted for War and the AS350. A little bit more terrain than the Drafted normally has, and some better, I think, objectives and stuff like that, or some more fun objectives. There's this one called Atlas Ball that you're essentially playing soccer with this big Atlas head that he 3D printed out. It was really cool. So
that's hilarious.
It's pretty cool. So that might be on my list of things to play a little bit more. So I might, I'm going to be working with Corey on kind of playtesting that and see if he can get it out for the general public.
I think that Sunday was also the day I talked Coach's kid into a Valhalla Cup stick on his dad's car.
Yes, the social shenanigans did occur. Maybe a little bit more tame than Gen Con, but why don't you tell the story there, Ben?
So Coach had brought his kid there, Brody. Good kid. You know, he was running around doing, you know, he was playing an Alpha Strike and playing in, you know, Classic and stuff like that. And at one point, we were sitting next to each other, I think it was during the singles day. And I was like, hey, man, here's a sticker for you, you know, from the Valhalla Club and stuff. And I said, make sure you put it on your dad's car. He'll love that. And apparently he took our sticker and slapped it right in the middle of the windshield over the steering wheel.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And yes. Apparently, Ben, who had ordered the stickers, got us like premium stickiness. It was not coming off.
He said he had to turn the defroster on for like an hour to try and scrape this thing off.
Yeah. Oh my God. Did you give him another sticker for being a good trooper?
I did. And then his dad found it and threw it away. I'm going to send you like 10 stickers.
Missed opportunity. I should have put a sticker on that cup when I sent it back to him.
You should have.
Quite the fun.
But I told him, I said, I'm going to get his address and send him like 10 stickers. And then he just put one on his car every time. And when his dad scrapes it off, he can put another one on there.
I do have his address.
There we go. Beware, Coach. Beware. Anything sent to your son, you know, you got to check it.
Yeah, really.
But yeah, the social hours were pretty fun. After hours was a lot of fun, just hanging out and chatting. Ben didn't get to stay at the same hotel as us, but he was there for quite a bit. So
yeah, I was staying until midnight or so. You know.
Yeah, it was good. A lot of good fun. That was definitely a good. I think that's probably my favorite kind of convention or whatnot type activity that I've been to so far. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. I would recommend it for a lot of people. Yeah. Any last thoughts on KSAG, Ben?
No, it was good.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the next one.
Yep, me too. Yeah, usually first weekend in December, I guess. So let's see. Next is Arms Dealer Update for Ares Games and Minis. So if you haven't already seen, Derek there at Ares Games and Minis has got the Kickstarter stuff in. So he's starting to pump that out. I know he was on shipment. He got shipment one like the day before he drove over to KSAG. So and he had two more coming in over the next couple weeks. So he's been working through that. So if you haven't gotten your Kickstarter stuff, or you want to get more of those vehicles,
or you messed up your survey and forgot a single Lance pack like I did, I'm gonna go get that Recon and Hunter pack because that's the only one I'm missing. So
yeah, I missed a pack as well, and so I already ordered that as soon as I saw the message that he got the Kickstarter stuff in. So. It's definitely the way to do it now that it's kind of trickling in out there. Yeah, Ares Games and Minis, hit them up. Let's see. On to the main metal, now that we're jumping down into this. So the main metal was suggested by our good friend Phil, or Faz as he is on the Discord. He suggested that we look into what I call the era that shall not be named.
Don't know a lot of people that like it.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. the Jihad source books. So we've been.
It gave us the Ares, therefore it is the greatest.
Well, I don't know if greatest is really the word I would use, but.
You shut your heretic mouth.
So we are going to be talking about some of the Jihad source books tonight. This is probably going to be an episode one of two. And tonight we're going to kind of browse through kind of the main plotline source books. It is amazing to see how much stuff really was produced for this era. But we're going to go through the kind of the main plotline source books and chat about those, as well as the dossiers. And there's five or six of those as well. So we'll get to if Jihad is a good era here in a bit. We'll see. I don't have strong opinions one way or another, but I think I wasn't like involved with Battletech heavily at the time that this came out. So I can go at it with kind of open eyes, maybe.
Isn't the general hate just the way it was executed? From my understanding, like I've mentioned before, I came in with Dark Age clicks and it was Dark Age. So my understanding is that once WizKids got the property, they essentially did almost like this universe level reset with the Jihad, primarily through source books, so that they could start building out the Dark Age to go with their line of stuff. That's my understanding of it. So a lot of people said it felt rushed and clunky and just kind of bullshit that they just killed off everything.
There's definitely a lot of notable characters disappearing or dying. There's a lot of stuff ending and a lot of chaos. So I could see that as being a possible truth. I'm not sure. So, but it is definitely a type of universe reset for sure.
Well, I'd say if you were to read a book,
none of us do that.
I only recently started reading, Ben. I'm sorry.
All right. In the Dawn of the Jihad source.
What are books?
On page 4 and 5, there's a whole 2-page write-up by Randall Bills about like how it all kind of came about with the Yeehaw era. That's what I like to call it. The Yeehaw era. Keeps me off those watch lists and things like that. But so there's a whole thing in here about how it was kind of planned out to do something like this. But then the whole FanPro, FASA, WizKids thing kind of went around the horn. And when they were already putting out Dark Age stuff. WizKids was already putting out Dark Age stuff and novels.
So what you're saying is WizKids was to Battletech as Disney is to Star Wars.
I don't follow the Star Wars stuff as much, so I'm going to say sure.
They ruined
the corporate end around.
Yeah, so like
they just did what they wanted and ignored everything else. There
was a bunch of stuff in the Dark Age novels that was already coming out that like referred to this time, and then so they was like, okay, we've got to connect two opposing pieces of string here with the end of the FedCom Civil War and the end of the, you know, third Star League or second Star League, and then the Dark Age stuff was already going on, so they're like, all right, how do we make these things kind of meet in the middle? And people got killed off, and things are referred to as being killed off. So they're like, well, okay, well, we have to figure that out, you know?
Yeah, I that makes total sense. I saw that write-up with Randall was there, but I didn't have the chance to read through it all. But that kind of, that does make sense, having looked kind of at across everything that's there, how that could be true. Yeah. That's pretty interesting. These main plotline books, there's actually, well, now there's 6 of them, because the first one includes 2 books that were put together, I guess, afterwards or something like that. So the first one is Blake Ascending, and that includes What Was Dawn of the Jihad, and then Jihad Hotspots 3070. Then we've got Jihad Hotspots 3072, Jihad Secrets, the Blake Documents, Jihad Hotspots 3076, Jihad Hotspots Terra, and then The Final Reckoning. So there's a lot of these hotspots kind of woven in, and we'll kind of talk about how those are a little bit different than the rest, but it's kind of hard to say that these are just source books and not campaign books or things like that, because there's a lot of mixing in this stuff all together. One of the things that's interesting about these source books is how they're presented. So in the kind of, the, especially I think it was the Blake Ascending one that I read through the very beginning of it, is that the information isn't just presented as like this report from a Comstar adept, like a lot of the other ones are, but it's presented like it's from a news agency. And so you've got like this background report going on, and then you have these little like blocks of text that are supposed to be little notes from people. And it, and the book even like says right up the front, it says the information is presented in the form of news articles, interviews, intercepted communications, and then presented by in-universe journalists. And it says they did this to be able to, so that the reader could see how each of the major powers was interpreting the events that they were reporting. And so there's another book called Interstellar Players that's basically supposed to be based on tabloids, and that's how you get to know people in the universe. But this is supposed to be somewhat more reliable. So with that, like thinking about how that's presented, what did you guys think of that being how these source books worked? I mean, how did you guys like that? Did you guys think it was okay? I don't know what. What did you guys think,
Mike?
I'll say it's definitely interesting. It's different from from any of the other source material. Whereas some of the other source books, right, they'll have little snippets of like a news article, but for it to be mostly news presented, like it's coming from a news network, it's definitely different. I'm a fan of that concept, but it is a little bit jarring when you're so used to how all the other source material is done up.
Yeah, to me it was like the normal stuff for me when I'm like, oh, I've read through lots of source books. They're like textbooks, right? So it's like all kind of organized and
yeah,
a little bit more streamlined and stuff. And so it was a little bit jarring, and to have this kind of uncertainty built into it. And then what they actually say is the later ones say, oh, well, we've kind of revised the timeline, and some, you know, our review that we put at the beginning of each subsequent one is more and more accurate than what you read beforehand. So it's like,
yeah,
it's kind of evolving history that was kind of interesting. What did you think, Ben?
You know, I remember when these came out, like they were like the new thing. I think it was like one of the last Gen Cons I was going to, possibly. And I remember getting it and reading it, and I'm like, this is not like all the source books. Like, this is odd and weird. And, you know, it became like a weird, like, I couldn't wrap my head around like what was going on. And I mean, back in those days too, they had sent out like an email. Let me see if I can find this Dagon thing. It was a couple of like, oh, it was a disc. That's what it was. It was an actual CD-ROM disc that you got from Gen Con. And it had like a bunch of like just odd stuff.
Were they supposed to be like the news reports or whatever that they're referencing or something?
It was the MRBC force brief update that came out, and it was talking about, and it had all these notes. It was a PDF file that had all these like notes, like in universe type notes, going to Uncle Chandy.
Yeah,
when he was like shopping around for like trying to figure out what was going on, and it was just all these different mercenary units that were like, what was going on with him during like 3067 and 3068, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was kind of neat to get that. And then there was another one. What was that? It was the Starling Report. There it is. So it was kind of the jihad conspiracy stuff that had a whole, it started off very much, very similar to where like Dawn of the Jihad starts. So it was kind of like a sneak peek of things, you know, that were coming out. And that threw a lot of people for a loop. And there was like conspiracy theories running rampant, you know.
Like in real life conspiracy theories? about universe there? Or
it was like on the back in the day that, you know, we just had the forums. We didn't have like Discord and like, you know, Facebook was this was like back in the MySpace age. Yeah. So it was kind of, and it was crazy because you just got together with your group and you're just like, did you see this? This is crazy, you know? And like people were printing out the stuff and taking it to their local gaming groups and stuff. So it was a wild time during that time frame. So it really threw a lot of people for a loop because they just weren't used to that type of source book. And like they had, you know, the source books up to that point were just like a history book, you know? It's,
yeah.
This happened, you know.
Well, it's like you've referred to him too, and I've since been calling it that since you first said it to me, was that you, like, it's the nonfiction side to you.
Right. Yeah.
It to be conspiracy, like all conspiracy and news-y, you know, it doesn't have that source material feel. It doesn't feel non-fiction-y. It feels more like any other fiction.
Yeah, and it's very, you know, the first couple are just all these different news reports that you're trying to piece together what the hell's going on. And then I remember the second book being like more like it wasn't even news reports anymore. It was like all these like usernames just chatting in a chat box kind of thing.
So there's so many different ways that it's presented. It is pretty unique. I'll say that to be nice to it.
It's like my initial thought on it is they went with that approach so that they could go and retcon stuff if they needed to, because they were trying to push this out so quickly to give it that reset they were going for. That's speculation.
Well, they, you know, that's what I was saying, is like in the subsequent, like in the later books in this list of six, each book says like, oh, this timeline now is more accurate because now we have more information, more in-universe information, right?
They didn't know what they wanted to do, but we're blasting stuff out and said, we'll fix it later.
Yeah, that's what it kind of seems like, right? Is this like, oh, well, we can always just in the next one, we can just say, well, this was an inaccurate news report. We can just make it whatever we want.
So that was a fucking lie.
Well, I think when you look at it from the perspective of in-universe type stuff, right? So you have different news networks reporting different stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like you look at what's reported in the news in this day and age, you know, over the last, say, 40 years or 50 years or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. You know, something that's in California reported on by an East Coast agency is not going to have the same weight as something that's on the East Coast, happening on the East Coast, reported by East Coast agencies. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a really clever way to like, and they are like very upfront about this. Like they're trying to get you into the feeling of this era, like what is happening, and I'm just a person, I'm just a dude like listening to the news, what should I believe? And even the news agencies are like, well, what really is happening, you know, halfway across the universe because of this, you know, there's nukes being used and lack of communication and HPG stations are going, you know, up and down and under different control. So I think it is pretty clever as far as like what they're trying to do. Now, is that a good thing for like you getting the information and like having it be clear and stuff? That's where I'm a little bit like, maybe not, but maybe that's the whole point.
Right? Well, I think that was kind of the whole point of it was to just create or kind of pull you into that chaos of that time frame, you know, of nobody knew what was going on, you know,
nobody Sounds knew like you did a good job,
you know? Yeah. I mean, you know, I know, being an old guy here, you know, you think back to like, you know, when 9/11 happened, you know, and I'm not trying to get political or anything like that, but the amount of information that was coming out, like, was so disjointed, you know, that you didn't know. It was just one day in time kind of thing. This is spanning years of chaos, you know? So that's kind of how I've always kind of reconciled it a little bit with after going back through and calming down a bit after I'm starting to read some of these things, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I like I said, I like the the news aspect of it, it's definitely different. I like it, but I think, like I said, what's jarring is that it's got that source material aspect tied to it, but it's not like any other source material. So that's what's off-putting for me.
Yeah, and just the amount of information in all those reports, because of that disjointed nature of it, like for me, it's difficult to retain, like, oh, this happened, then this happened, then this happened. And so, yeah, it is almost like chaos inside my own brain, like, oh, I don't really remember. I just knew there were like nukes used and lots of these people that I had read a lot about, they're gone now and stuff like that. I don't know. Pretty interesting, not very straightforward, especially like if you wanted to follow one faction's storyline, you kind of gotta read almost everything to get that one faction throughout. There's some subheading sometimes, but it's not always clear, like, oh, if I want to find out what's happening to Jade Falcon, I turn to page 59 or whatnot. Sometimes you just got to go through it instead, and you got to go through all these books to find out what's happening with them. So
sprinkled everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of sprinkling. So,
You just get to the final book, you know, and just move through the entire timeline.
So you just
I'm here for the summary.
You just jump, you go to the front, and you're like, okay, I know that Jade Falcon's involved, and then you go to the last book and be like, well, what happened and where'd they end up?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, I mean, hell, I'm looking at it right now. The Final Reckoning book has a timeline in it that is like 30 pages of just like date. Yeah. This is what's going on, you know? So I think that's where I ended up at. I got through like the first two couple of books and I was like, man, what the hell is going on around here? And I had to like keep going to the Final Reckoning timeline and going, okay, that makes sense. All right, now I'm reconciling a lot of this stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, so any gems that you guys saw in any of these main plotline source books, any things that you really liked? You guys think about that a sec. I'm just going to say that one of the things I thought was kind of cool is that they did both a plotline book and a campaign book. So it was like, okay, these things happen, and now you can play them, and it's all in the same book. And that's, you know, that's the Hotspot series. So I thought that was pretty cool. There aren't too many scenarios in each book, but there are some, so you can kind of jump in, and they have a lot of like tons of optional rules and lots of different things, especially as you go on through the Hotspots. There's a lot of the rules annex that they get into, like warships and the Manii Domini stuff and all those things. So there's tons of crazy like gameplay options through those Hotspots. But that's one thing that I did think was pretty unique and cool. Anyways, any gems in there for you guys, things that you liked?
You know, I kind of liked how each of the books, like especially like when you look at like Dawn of the Jihad, you know, the last maybe 10 or 15 pages, looking at it now, has got like little missions. So you can start off with like, you know, you build a random mercenary force or whatever, and you can just start off like in the chaos, you know, like from the beginning. And it gives you, it's the whole Chaos Unbound kind of rule set, if you will, that involves like the war chest points and things like that. But you can use it not necessarily with, you know, classic BattleTech or Total Warfare, but you could also use it with the BattleTech RPG, you know. So
yeah,
you can start building, you know, an RPG campaign as a you know, GM kind of thing.
Well, that was definitely, it definitely seems like looking through all these, it definitely seems to be more of a focus back then, because they definitely played in, you know, these dossiers we'll mention later here, as well as all these books. They've got like tons of information about the characters, whereas something that has come out recently, like Hinterlands, that's just kind of, you know, coming out now, it doesn't sound like it's much character driven, much RPG material really for, you know, doing that stuff, whereas it still has lots of material for tabletop things, so. That was really cool. What do you think, Mike or Dave?
Yeah, we got the shoulder shrug from Mike.
Dave, you got any thoughts?
No, unfortunately, I didn't really get into the Jihad as much. Because, like, Mike, I didn't really get back into Battletech until after the HeroClix. So my knowledge on the Jihad era itself is going to get significantly more if I can make it to episode 2. Because I did not have a chance to actually sit down and read. So I apologize, listeners. I don't have a whole lot to add to the discussion. Not yet.
What'd you think, Mike? Anything that you liked from this kind of presentation style or from any of the books you were able to look at?
I mean, not from anything different than from what I mentioned earlier, though. But when you were talking about the like the hotspots and whatnot, is that kind of like what... Did that like evolve into what is now the spotlight on with campaign related stuff?
Not the spotlight on, because I think that's more planet related type stuff. But I think the turning points may be a little bit closer to the hot spots. What do you think, Ben, as far as those two types of material?
Yeah, I think, you know, because back in those days, you know, turning points wasn't really a thing. And then they, around the time these books started coming out, you started having the Jihad Turning Points series of turning points.
Yeah.
And that's where it kind of jump-started a lot of the turning point stuff, because now you have, you know, Jihad Turning Point, Tharkad, Jihad Turning Point, you know, Atreus, Jihad Turning Point, Luthien, you know. So you had all these little mini scenarios you could play out during the Jihad, and that kind of evolved into historical turning points, which was, you know, all the historical stuff from like the First Succession War, you know, Second Succession War, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then when they finally realized, hey, let's just turn it all into one big turning point list, then you started getting into other areas that weren't necessarily Jihad focused, but, you know, all the pivotal moments in Battletech history, if you will, future history. So
yeah,
it definitely changed, but it's definitely, I think, where Turning Points was at the time, where you could take a planet and battle it out for that planet on the table, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, because like the scenarios in these hotspots, they're like, there's some, but I think the turning points have more, at least as far as like an overall campaign for a planet type thing. Whereas hotspots was like, oh, you can play some of these things and kind of get the feel for the era, but not go completely into it like a turning points. That was just my thought when I was reading through. So, I mean, all of this has been done for quite a while. I mean, all these books have been out for a while. If you guys were CGL and you were going to read, like, okay, let's like clean up the Jihad era, what would you guys do with these source books? Would you keep them presented the way they are? What kind of changes would you guys make? What do you think?
I mean, I do like all the stuff CGL's been doing with source books of late. They've been a lot of fun to read. I think if they were going to reconcile maybe at least some love for the era and revisit this, and let's not summarize, but what's the word? I don't know. Go through and make it like and revisit it and kind of reprint some Jihad stuff in a more modern style. Mm-hmm. Maybe not necessarily have the news aspect. Definitely still have like snippets of that, but actually go in with, okay, we all know this as actual fact now. It's not happening in moment, but go like, whereas before they were like, it was all present tense, and that was why there was all the chaos and all the differences between everything. But now that it is so far in the past, even timeline wise, go through and actually hit it from a source standpoint with actual facts. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, because I look at the Ilklan era, like the end of the Dark Age and the start of the Ilklan. I'm like, okay, that's a reset as well. So if you're looking at resets, you know, they're definitely doing things differently than what we saw for the Jihad, especially with kind of the faction-based source books again, where it's not, you know, the whole universe all in one book. It's each faction has its own dedicated source book, and that makes it much easier to kind of keep in your mind, okay, this faction, these things happened, instead of like, oh, this planet and this planet and this planet got nuked or whatnot. So I think that's something that I would definitely go back and like kind of make all the faction stuff in one area and then move on to a different faction rather than the chaos of it. Like in a, you know, summarized source book, going back and being like, okay, we know this stuff for sure now. Dave or Ben, any thoughts about what you would?
I think it'd be interesting to do like full on, like Great House or faction propaganda, to go back and say like, hey, here's what actually happened.
Like, because in universe propaganda, you're saying?
Yeah. Because I mean, essentially, if I understand everything correctly, the Jihad books were all circumspect. But now you have an opportunity to go and say like, well, here's what actually happened as told by the Capellan Confederation, as told by the Federated Sons. And you could just make some interesting stories that way to go back and say like, I don't know, give it a little bit more depth and play up the intrigue a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, I mean, just due to the way that it was presented, there was definitely, I can imagine, like, and Ben, you can tell me if this is right, like, that kind of like, oh, you know, what is happening, and who's going to take out, who, you know, what planet's going to fall next to the Blakus or whatnot. I don't know. There's definitely intrigue in there. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. I think if I was going to not necessarily change anything, but revisit some things and get more fiction in that time frame, you know, because there just wasn't a lot of fiction that was going on at the time.
Oh, really?
There was Battlecore was kind of trending down. A lot of people were trying to push fiction into it, but Battlecore was kind of shutting down at the time, and that's where all the fiction from the Jihad era was supposed to go. But it kind of shut down around that time frame, and so you didn't get a lot of the Jihad fiction that was out there.
So it was just the source book is basically, or mostly just the source books that was most of what the Jihad era.
Yeah, there was a few pieces here and there, and now they've with Shrapnel they've started to go back and revisit some of those things. But you didn't have any novels about the entire era, you know. I think you had maybe two.
And well, it might be a great opportunity for some of those really good shrapnel writers to be given given a chance to write a full-blown novel.
Well, they've kind of been doing that already. There's been a lot of
like a Charles Gideon
shrapnel. There's been a lot of Jihad articles, or at least not in the moment of Jihad, but looking back into Jihad, hey, this is a fight we were in. This is a battle we were in. There's been a lot more Jihad stuff coming out in Shrapnel.
Yeah, I mean, you got the Cracked Canopy stuff, which it's centered on Jihad for a little while. I don't know if it's still doing that or not. I'm behind on my Shrapnel reading. But I know that, you know, the first few Cracked Canopies were about, you know, Jihad stuff. So it's definitely starting to come back into it, but then you have to try and reconcile that short story or that fiction with what you read in the source book, you know? So it's
Well, not really, because the source books were all collections of journalist entries. So
all hearsay.
You can pretty much write whatever you want.
You can. But I'm just saying, like, you have to look at, from a writing standpoint, you have to look through the entire Jihad set and go, okay, is there something here that can be fleshed out? Is there something here? Which there's a lot of that. There's definitely a lot of that, because not a lot of things were fleshed out. There was a lot of miscommunication. There was a lot of, you know, different contradictory reports and things. And you just got to write your truth at that point, you know? So
it just takes a little bit more research, because it's all over the place.
It's all very disjointed.
I would think it would be even more difficult, because then every time someone wants to like do something that interacts with a Jihad event, you have to make a decision. Oh, is this real or is this not? And so it's like, it's not only just the fact finders, but it's like the fact finders have to, you know, ask whoever's in charge of the fiction. And it's like, oh, is this going to be real? And so they can actually use it for the story or not. So I think that'd be like doubly difficult.
I feel like the CGL fact check team hates the Jihad. Yeah. Thoroughly.
I could imagine so.
I mean, they're pretty good. You know, they're pretty good at what they do. So it's one of those things where they've got a database to kind of connect some dots here. And, you know, that might, you'd have to really work probably pretty closely with the fact check team if you wanted to do something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which not saying it's not possible, but
yeah, exactly. It's just probably more work than not. So, but yeah, I think, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if we ever see kind of any new recaps or any new big, you know, source material or novels back in the Jihad. I mean, you know, novels will probably be easier than like going back and summarizing everything that this was all true versus it was maybe true in the previous source novels or source books. So that'd be interesting. So as far as gameplay potential, I was looking through these and I'm like, oh, there's, you could spend the rest of your life playing Battletech and the Jihad. But I guess that's kind of true of any of the eras. What do you guys think of as far as like getting gameplay aspects from these source books?
I mean, I think it's great because there's so much stuff you can do. And I kind of, the Jihad era kind of harkens back a little bit to the Third Succession War for me. Because you're scrapping it out, you know, you're a small mercenary unit that you're just like, what the hell is going on? You know, I'm just here to do a job. And, you know, you're trying to figure out, you know, how do I get away from this stuff or where do I go? You know, where do I go for my next job? You know, so, and then are you going to get double crossed? Are you going to get, you know, so it really harkens back to that where you don't have a clearly defined, I mean, obviously, Word of Blake was the aggressor in that whole thing.
Yeah.
So you don't have a clearly defined like, oh, this is the clan invasion corridor, and this is where we're going to go fight the clans kind of thing for the clan invasion, you know, or the FedCom Civil War where you've got, you know, Steiner versus Davian kind of thing. Here it's all over the place. You know?
Yeah, I was thinking if I want to jump into RPGs, like this would be the era to go to because it's just like, you know, open sandbox all the way.
Oh yeah, it's Wild West. You can do whatever you want, you know.
Yeah, and they have tons of information about actual characters, tons of character information for this era.
Mm-hmm.
When you mentioned they threw in some optional rules in some of these too, was there any like optional rules that stood out that you looked at? That would be interesting, or was like it looked broken as shit.
Well, yes, but I mean that's the thing is like the era is so crazy, and like maybe you want to go a little bit crazy, but some of them I just looked through my notes here, but they have. I mean, there's like a lot of kind of they have these like pocket dropships and things like that. The Manii Domini stuff is just bonkers, and the Celestial Omnimechs with those as well. So like each of those hotspots at the end, the rules annex, that's some interesting stuff. If you just got those and put those together in some sort of crazy Jihad rules annex, I mean, there's the very first one, let's see, Jihad Hotspots 3070, which is part of the Blake Ascending. So the rules annex for that one is just about nuclear weapons. It's like how to use nuclear weapons in your Battletech gameplay. And it's not just one page. I mean, it's like multiple pages of like nuclear weapon use. And so I, you know, every once in a while I'll hear someone want to get crazy with Davy Crockett's or whatnot. And I'm like, oh, this is your stuff here. This is. So every one of those hotspots has something kind of interesting or crazy to look at in those rules annexes for sure. In one of them is like they tell you how to construct retrotech mechs and stuff. I don't know. It's just like pretty. One that actually made me think of Ben was in one of them. They have special force rules for the Word of Blake, and I was like, ah, Ben and his special force drops or something. So. Yeah, it's pretty wild. And I think, the RPG aspects, I think are just like so wide open here. I mean, there's tons you could do with tabletop as well, but the RPG is pretty crazy. Any other thoughts about what you would do as far as gameplay with this stuff?
I mean, there's just so much there. I mean, you can do so much with it, you know, yeah. from an RPG standpoint. So I like it for that you can just go all in, and you could spend months or years playing a game, you know, campaign wise in this era.
Yeah, the Hotspots Terra, I was just looking back through my notes on the Hotspots Terra. They have like the rules for Castle Bryan game rules, mm-hmm. and they have like actual like maps of the underground areas and stuff. It is crazy. and they also have like record sheets, not only for the new units that they talk about, but also for the new like drop ships. And I think they even have a couple warships. I mean, there's like tons of warships in this era that are kind of all over the place. So that's another big thing. But yeah, there's just so much here. I mean, to play with, even just getting one of these would be pretty cool. And for that fact, I would just say, you know, if you're looking for something new, if you want to try something else new, I would grab one of these. You don't have to grab all of them, maybe, but maybe one of them. And if you're looking for a place to put a campaign into, if you want to be a little crazy, any of these would be good. Any of these hot spots for sure. And then we were going to briefly mention the dossiers. Do you remember much about these, Ben? Did you get into these much?
I mean, I remember reading through like Interstellar Players
mm-hmm.
1 and 2, like just being like, whoa, what is happening here? You know? I mean, the whole write up on the Bounty Hunter was phenomenal.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was one that I dove into. So they've got, 5, I think, let's see, of them that are out there. As far as the dossiers, they've got Interstellar Players 1 and 2, the Bounty Hunter, Jason Zachlin, Yuling Zanshi, and then the Masters and Minions, the Star Corps dossiers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Star Corps ones were pretty interesting. Those were pretty, I mean, they went everywhere, and they kind of went into all the different factions, and for each faction they had like all the key personalities and then some others, and then major companies and some key worlds and then key military command. So I saw those as like, this is where you're going to start your campaign, you know, pick one of these factions, or this actually like develops even further, I think, with stuff we'll talk about in our next Jihad episode, which will be about the objectives. They're not objectives like you think. They're like little PDFs of these objective things from different factions and stuff. And so, but all this information, you know, for each of the major inner sphere factions and the major periphery factions. So those that love periphery stuff, there's stuff there as well. But the Bounty Hunter was pretty cool to read through as well. And they have like, you know, they have all this information for a whole lance of units, to use with the Chaos Campaign war chest system and everything. So yeah, lots of cool stuff here.
Yeah, I mean, even in the first couple of chapters of, you know, Dawn of the Jihad, I mean, you've got little tidbits in there that you could just take and run with from an RPG standpoint. I mean, I remember reading something about like the Star League, I think it was Kirita Theodore, when he was a Star League head honcho guy. Before Sun Tzu took over, I mean, he had dispatched like these Fury teams, which the Fury teams were special operations pulled from all the different nations. And okay. They were like tracking down all of these weapons of mass destruction type stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's the start right there for a great campaign, you know, to kind of start tracking these things down. And, you know, you could spend couple of in-game years doing that type of stuff. So
yeah you know. We've already like gone over the RPG elements, but I think like the mixture that you could do between RPG and, you know, be it classic or Alpha Strike or whatnot, but the tabletop, going back and forth between the two, there's a lot of talk in these hotspots as well about like how to translate that and stuff. So
yeah,
that would be really cool too. Well, so what's your opinion on the Jihad as a place to play, or the era itself, Ben? What do you think overall.
I like it. You know, I really do, because it's just, it's so chaotic. It's so, you know, there's so many doors you could walk through and, you know, get blown up or, you know, have something else going on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's you never know if at the end of your campaign a nuke is just going to go off and your whole unit's gone anyway. But
right.
Just going through these this main plotline source material, I thought, oh, this is way cooler than I thought. I'd kind of, you know, been sold a bill of goods saying, you know, jihad, no bueno, don't go there. But I'm kind of intrigued to like try stuff out here. You kind of have like the big baddies, right? Word of Blake. And so you can, whatever faction you want to play off of them, then, but there's also some other interfaction stuff going on and clans are still involved. So there's a lot of stuff that you could do.
There is. Yeah. And I think too, we missed one book that complements these, not necessarily it's its own standalone thing, but the Wars of Reaving, you know, for all the clan.
Yes,
homeworld guys, you know, it was set during the same era. So you kind of, if you're a clan guy that really wants to look into, you know, how did the Hell's Horses show up in the Innosphere? How did the Goliath Scorpions show up in the Innosphere? You got to get into that and really read what was going on in the clan homeworlds during the Jihad era. So.
Yeah, because we still only get the Innosphere side of the clans. So you're right, for the homeworld portion, it's the Wars of Reaving, right? And there's a supplemental that goes along with that as well. Yeah. So, yeah. Mike, you were going to say something?
I was just going to say that, like you said earlier, it's purely chaotic and it's a wide open sandbox. So there's definitely a lot of playing potential that you can do. But also, from the aspect of the Battletech resurgence in general, the Jihad gets a lot of hate from the OG players of the day that went through the transition as the IP changed hands into WizKids and all this other stuff. But now there's a whole lot of newer and even younger players that didn't experience that shakeup. And so they can go back and play this, read through all this, but you're coming from it from a futuristic standpoint in the timeline now. But I mean, there's just that much more playing potential to go play other stuff. So obviously, there's still a lot of love for Succession Wars, Clan Invasion, and now Ill Clan Era when it comes to gameplay. But as people get, you know, burn out, whatever it is, on the current era that you've been playing in over and over and over again, talk with your homies and say, let's go to the era everyone hates and realize it's not actually that bad.
Yeah. I, you know, reading through this, I think I've put Dark Age down as my least favorite so far. I just can't deal with the flippy mechs or whatever, but Jihad really does intrigue me now. I want to read, you know, dive really deep into at least one.
And there was a lot of crazy units that came out that time with, you know, the Celestials for Blake, and Word of Blake and all that stuff. So there's a lot of cool stuff happening too. Just don't overdo it and be that jerk that's always playing the Celestials and
everything. Only Celestials.
You got to mix it up.
And the drones. Mix it up.
Oh, and the drones at the end of the Jihad. That's another thing that comes out. They talk a lot about that in the Terra, the Hotspots Terra, I think. So there's rules for that there. I have never tried drones, but Greg W. from here was going to try a New Year's Eve event with drones versus players, which sounds interesting. Interesting. I don't know. But yeah, overall, I am intrigued to dive even deeper into these source books, and I would recommend you try one out. Maybe grab either the beginning or the end or one of these hotspots. Maybe. Do you have one you'd recommend, Ben?
Hotspot?
Well, you know, just if someone wants to grab one of these source books, which one should they grab? Should they go to just the end or the beginning?
What do you think? On how much you like your life in chaos. You know? If you live in chaos and you thrive on that type of stuff, start at the beginning and you're just like, what is happening in my life? But I think if you want to get to the, you know, Mike was talking and maybe it sparked something about some of the newer players. Like, if you want to know how do we get to the Dark Age, just pick up the Jihad Final Reckoning.
Yeah.
And go, oh, okay, so this is kind of how we ended up with all these industrial mechs running around with machine guns on them and stuff. You
know? Yeah. I as far as like a plot line, as far as like if I want to know the lore, I would totally agree. Like, I just want to know what ended up being, you know, what ended up happening in the Jedi. I would definitely pick up Final Reckoning. For actual gameplay, I would probably pick up either Hotspots 3072 or 3076. And they kind of go in like six month increments, and they tell you some of what happened, but then they also give you a bunch of kind of campaign missions and things like that. So if I was just looking to pick something up to play in the era, those are one of those is what I would pick up. What I would say. So Jihad, not the worst. We can say the word, maybe, but maybe not in the title, or else we'll get the no.
It's all subjective. You're gonna have there's those folks that don't play anything past Succession Wars, so the worst era ever is the Clan Invasion era, you know?
Yeah.
And the Jihad never even happens for them because they don't leave 3025. It's all subjective.
Well, and back to your comment, Mike, about, you know, this kind of the resurgence, right? Just think about like that gap, and there were a lot of players did kind of leave, you know, after Clan Invasion, maybe after Civil War a bit. And that's where I kind of left Battletech for a little bit, and then I come back and now it's the Ill Clan. So I don't really know those interior eras, and discovering it with this, you know, doing this research is pretty interesting. I kind of am intrigued. So maybe that's a lot of these returning players might do the same. Be something. But that is our main medal for this month. But at some point we'll revisit and talk more about the campaign side of all the many more source books for the Jihad. So with that, it is finally time for the drink of the month.
Hey all, this is Ben here, your Battletech Master of Spirits. Get your mixers, liquors, shakers, stirrers, and strainers ready as we cover this month's Battletech Drink of the Month.
All right, folks, your Drink of the Month this month is in honor of Andrew Kroll and the KSAG saga that's spawned from there. Your drink of the month is called the Grasshopper. It consists of 3/4 ounce of creme de menthe, 3/4 ounce of creme de cacao, I don't know, whatever that is, 3/4 of an ounce, half and half, combine and shake, pour over just 25% of ice.
25%?
25% ice.
So fill a glass to 100% and then remove 25.
Remove 75.
Yeah.
That way you know you don't have all your units, more than enough units on the table.
We love you, Andrew. How does this one taste, Ben?
It's pretty good. It's kind of like those creamy mints you get at the Olive Garden.
Yeah, is this like grasshopper ice cream
or whatever it is? Yeah, kind of like that. You know, it's kind of minty, kind of chocolatey. You know, it's not too shabby. Don't drink a whole lot of them. Don't make a pitcher.
Yeah, had a little bit, put some bourbon in is what I hear. So that's
you could try that. I give it a little smoky flavor, smoky mint chocolate. I don't know. I didn't try that. That sounds bad.
Yeah.
So, but that's your drink of the month.
Woo! Woo! Julia, well, let's move on. Sounds interesting for sure. Okay, upcoming action. Not too much happening because we're going into the holidays. So I'll just say it now. Merry Christmas, everyone, and Happy New Year.
Merry Mechmas.
Ooh, throwing in a little,
Yeah.
Mechmas. The one we do know of coming around the corner here in Colorado is Genghis Khan. That's happening February 20th through the 23rd. in Aurora, Colorado, which is very near to Denver. It's really part of Denver at this point. You can go for a day for $55 or go for the weekend for $75. There's going to be BattleTech happening at least on Saturday and Sunday for sure. Looks like, and this is still getting organized, but this is probably going to be an Alpha Strike doubles tournament on Saturday. Greg is going to be running this, and he hadn't picked out the era yet, but he said probably a later era. So not early Succession Wars, I'm thinking. And then for Sunday, there's probably going to be some narrative classic games run by Jeremy. Didn't have specific set in stone yet, but more towards kind of you get to start with a small Merc company and kind of work your way through the day. They've also got here at Genghis Khan, Brian Young, a BattleTech author, will be visiting. Not sure exactly which days, more information to come on that, but Brian Young will be visiting there. And Greg will be giving away, he got these from Goober, Ben, some 40th anniversary virtual world dice. So if you've ever visited the virtual world and done the, what are they called?
The pods.
The pods. You can get some dice from virtual world. So that'll be cool too.
Are they doing Megatech again?
I haven't heard that they're doing it again. So maybe not. It was pretty cool to see such large mechs on the ground.
A great intro.
Yeah.
And like a way to teach new potential players.
Yeah. I mean, the minis we have are cool, but when they're like a foot tall, then
a foot and a half tall. Yeah.
Yeah. It becomes pretty cool.
Were they using large foam dice for that too? Was the dice also mega? Like that's the only way to do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I don't think they were using small dice. That'd be no fun. No. Not at all. Yeah, so that's the only thing I think we have for upcoming action. I'm sure 2025 will bring us more cons, more events and stuff, but that's what we've got going on here close. We ready for shout-outs, gentlemen?
Do it.
Send okay. It. I'll jump in. I'm gonna try and get ahead of Ben so I get all the cool names and then can't repeat, right? So from KSAG, fantastic time really. And the most fantastic part of it was just getting to meet and hang out with a lot of cool people, especially a lot of people from over in the Midwest and the Eastern side of things that I don't get to go to and meet people. So Tom Bovey for running some cool events and helping out with the AS350 all weekend. Good strong voice was needed in that room, and he had it. So Clint, who ran some awesome classic BattleTech stuff on Saturday. He was full get out Merrick Prince, like with the shoulder pads and everything. Oh man, that was awesome. Seneca, great guy to meet and play against. Sean Goolsby, Diablo. Fun to hang out with Topa again. Greg W was my roomie for the weekend, so always great to be with him. Doyle and his flatbeds. Corey Held, yeah, so Ben played him, and then I mentioned his conscripted chaos. That's pretty cool. So Corey, yeah, great to meet you and talk to you. Goober, he's got all the energy in the world. Awesome, I love it. Let's see, Mario and his daughter Enora, great to see them again. I met Kaz for the first time, and Colton, Brody, little Brody Cruel, way to go, man. Put that sticker right there anytime. And Derek War Crimes. Great to meet them all. Also awesome to play bourbon. Of course, I lose again. And great to see the Wolfnet guys again. Tommy. Awesome leatherwork. Matt. And love you guys, Coach and Andrew. Always great to see you guys. You guys run great events. And last but not least, Derek King. Man, great to meet you finally in person and great to play a game against you. And I think, whew, that's plenty of names. Maybe I forgot some, but great to be with you guys in KSAC. Whew, okay, now over to Mike.
All right, my shout out is going to be for Zimmer Art, who's always hanging out with me on my Twitch streams, whether that's MechWarrior Online or I recently dove into Delta Force. It's something. I suck at first-person shooters, man. I haven't played a first-person shooter on PC in years, so I am not good. But he sits there and cheers me on. So thanks for always hanging out with me, Zimmer. And then Bosco's Cards, Games, and Comics, local store here in Anchorage, for just having an awesome selection of BattleTech products, as well as painting supplies and basing material. It's just a really awesome store here in the local area. I needed to run out and get some paint for a mini I was working on. Yes, I painted something, finally. But yeah, so shout out to Zimmer Art and Bosco's for both being awesome.
Nice. Ben?
My shout outs are for the WNRP crew minus Charles, because you weren't there, sucker. Had a good time, as always. Andrew and Aaron, you know, Tommy and Matt. Matt and Tommy and I managed to get in an epic game on Saturday night, so that was kind of neat. You know, they did a lot of heavy lifting, as well as the whole entire Minnesota BattleTech community that's out there. You guys got a really good crew out there. Keep it going. My partner in war crimes for the doubles tournament, Greg Talls, you know, good on you, Greg. We did our best. That's all I can say. And my singles opponents, Corey J, Corey H, Bill, Jedi Bob, and John N. Thanks for good games and just being cool guys to kind of get to know and hang out with. So had a lot of fun. So that's all. And of course, like Matt said, it was great meeting, you know, Derek King from Aries Games and Minis for the first time. So we had a couple of good long chats, and you know, it was really, really awesome to kind of finally meet him and get his perspective on things. So awesome.
Yeah, what a great dude. It was awesome to see him. Mike, I'll turn it over to you for a sec.
All right, just a quick last minute shout out. Thanks to all of our Patreon members helping to support the show. You guys are awesome. Our topic for the day was suggested by Faz, who's one of our Patreon members. So thanks for the topic, and thanks for supporting the show, everybody.
And with that, I believe we've reached the thing we call last call.
Last call.
Last call.
Last call, everyone. Have a great holidays.
See Merry Mechmas.
Have a good one.
Thanks for joining us today in the Valhalla Club. If you'd like to hang out with us and many other BattleTech podcasters, then be sure to join our Discord. Link is in the description. Special thanks to our sponsor, Aries Games and Miniatures. Aries is the premier online retailer for all your BattleTech needs. If you would like to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/thevalhallaclub. If you have any comments, please feel free to send an email to thevalhallaclub@outlook.com. Until next time, mech fans.